something flammable into your glass. It's Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. Nathan is in California visiting Disneyland and apparently sitting at an Anaheim Ducks game, although I think it's over at this point. So fuck him. He's not here for the release of the Warriors of Chaos. So I have Ward with me, a returning co-host, guest host to the show. I've already fucked up the intro. I'm just going to... Scotch. We are drinking 18-year-old Glenlivet. I always enjoy having somebody with me on the show who actually will drink scotch with me.
It's tasty. It's also better than a Jaded Gamer.
It's so good for you. It is. It is better than a Jaded Gamer. That's also very true. Did you see the post on the Facebook page where somebody made one? And they're like, it tastes like those candy sharks, those gummy
whales,
sharks.
The blue whales.
And I was like, I fucking love those things. So I had this hankering to like go buy them. But then I thought about like the shape of that bottle and... Nope. No fucking thank you. So yes, you will recognize Ward from our 2-year anniversary / 100th episode. But yes, we are here to talk about the Warriors of Chaos book. But before we get on to that, what have you been up to lately, Ward? What are you doing this week in hobby?
This week, I actually was building some Firestorm models.
What kind of Firestorm models?
Well, Kyle from Imaginary Wars finally got me some Tarkarian... not the cruisers, the...
Tarakian frigates?
Yeah, that's them.
Fuck you! Seriously?
So, yeah, I got them all.
Damn it, I didn't think he had them.
Yeah, he had...
God, fuck you. Did you see my Tarakian?
I did, and now I can't do green, so I have to choose something else now. But yeah, no, I've been working on the frigates there. I got two packs, so I'm cleaning those right now.
Because they're good. They're like Directorate frigates, but better.
I also... have two units of cruisers for that, and then the big battleship, so I'm set for those guys. And
so are you planning on doing a Tarakian Alliance of Kurak, like pure Tarakian?
You know what, I'm just buying anything that's like part of Alliance of Kurak, I'm buying. So it's...
There's a lot of nice, very interesting, nice models in there.
I'm just addicted to spaceships.
That's also very, very true, yeah. No, I mean, like, you know, I've been painting up my Terrans, I've had a couple of games... you and I were supposed to have a game, it fell through. I was supposed to have another game with Matt, it fell through. I was supposed to have a game with Tom and John, and that fell through. So in the last week, I was supposed to literally be playing, like, a shit ton of Firestorm so I could actually figure out if 1250 was appropriate for, like, a 3-game tournament when I redo the, Storm Zone Carnage thing.
I was talking to Kyle about that, and yeah, so now it's just like, well, what should I... do I do something new? Do I bring out the fleet again, or...
Well, see, the nice thing about Alliance is whatever you do, you can always just mix in with your unfinished Cerulean's.
yeah, okay.
Did you... I'm sorry. I had to slide that one in there because we are talking to Ward. Ward is notoriously known for starting... He'll do a test paint. That's the thing. He'll do a test paint. It'll be a great, gorgeous test paint.
Love it.
And he's a great modeler. He's a great painter. Not so good at conversions, but great painter. But he will never fucking finish an army if his life's dependent on it, unless it's a primer black army.
Well, I'm going to try to paint something else for Out of the Basement, too, so that way you guys...
Hold on.
Stop. I said try.
Okay.
I said try.
Yes. Hold on, I got a question for you. Ward and I, we used to live in the same house together, and way, way, way back in the day, we were both doing Imperial Guard. And do you remember the name of the planet that your Imperial Guard came from that I wouldn't let you live down ever?
The actual word was Ventress, but you called it Ventrilox.
Because I said Ventress sounded like a male enhancement drug. You're like, because they come from they're drop troopers. They come from Ventress. And I'm just like, that is heavy-handed shit. They're from Ventrilox. You know, because they drop from the air.
Well,
vent.
It was an actual, it's like a Latin word that I actually looked up for it.
Absolutely,
and then,
get it.
And then you just slapped me around. And
oh my God, I couldn't let you live it down.
No, and then, hey, do you know what happened with that army?
You never finished them.
Nothing.
Nope.
So it didn't even matter. Oh, well.
I think you played one game, and that was a test game against my Talarans, and you kicked the shit out of me.
I sold that army so fast, though. Yeah. Like, so many... Because I bought the...
Because you've done like... Cadian... You basically ordered all the backpacks to make them drop troopers, because they were basically just Cadians. Some Kazarkin.
They were all Kazarkin.
Were they all Kazarkin? I thought you had some Cadians.
No, I went all Kazarkin. So, like, three of us at the same time, me, Dan Beyer, and somebody else, like, we ordered a crap ton of... Fuck it. A shit ton of Kazarkin metal models, and then, like,
I like how you were like, crap ton. No, fuck this shit, motherfucker. A shite load.
A shite load.
That wasn't quite an upgrade.
Well.
A cunt's closet worth of models.
Oh my goodness. What is your mom going to say when she hears this?
My mom does not know. Well, my mom knows that I have a podcast, but I've yet to give her the website. And nobody has been jackass enough to try to invite her to Data Gamercast, to invite her to the Facebook page. So the funniest thing is when I'm actually in Arizona and I have to record, and I'm just like, okay, mom, I'm going in the backyard. Just don't come back into the backyard for the next hour. And I have to like try to keep my cursing down to a minimum as much as possible. But yeah. So for me, primarily, I've been working on, I can't really say what I've been working on, but... some changes to the site, some changes to the podcast, you know, again, nothing crazy or anything like that. Like just, as I love to say so many times, we're gamers and we have very short attention span. So things change and you just kind of have to get used to that kind of stuff. But, for the most part, yeah. Other than that, just Firestorm, painting Firestorm and kind of looking more and more at, what I want to do for the next tournament. I've said that every fucking podcast for the last like four shows. So
I think what's helped me,
although somebody did ask me at Out of the Basement whether I was going to run one in Edmonton or not.
Oh really?
Yeah, they I think it was Dana Sanderson.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
He had said, like, you know, are you planning on running one in Edmonton? Yes, I am planning on running one in Edmonton. It's more of an issue of I'm not gonna overreach before I feel like I'm confident in running these things in a format that works. Right. And so doing it with Kyle, doing it at his store, working between, you know, the already thriving Edmonton community of gamers who are actually playing this game and the startup group of people in Calgary who are playing this game. I feel like that works very, very well to do it that way. But, you know, probably after the one that I run in, I'm thinking May in Calgary, I'm thinking we'll probably do a follow up in September. You know, and actually have that one be in Edmonton. It's going to be an issue of location and things of that nature to actually find a locale that I'm happy with. You know, it's because it's such an early fledgling game in this community, it's hard to start planning big too early. And we see so many people try to do that shit all the time where they're just like, oh, come on, guys, Malifux tournament. And you're just like, what? Are there three people playing this? And they're like, yeah, but if we run a tournament, it's going to make people want to buy these games. It's not. It's really not.
You need the people playing the game first before you can even think about running an event, right? So, I mean, that's why, like, you get so many people out to Warhammer and Warhammer 40K tournaments because they're the big ones right now. And, I mean, like, War Machine is...
I'm going to move the mic closer to you because you've got a little voice.
I do have a little voice and you yell.
I have a booming voice that I can't turn down. I work in management and I have people on my team when I bring them into a coaching session and they're just like, could you just talk quieter? Sorry, God, it's just the natural tenor of my voice involves alcohol, and as soon as scotch hits my throat,
it's like the angels sing.
Or that I'm blowing an angel. I have to ask forgiveness for that one later.
Maybe.
But that was a subtle nudge to your Out of the Basement War Machine games.
Yeah.
How'd you do? How'd you place?
I was like dead in the middle.
We were gonna have somebody from Out of the Basement on the show, but he told me to fuck off.
He was busy.
He told me to fuck off. You're gonna make excuses for Steve, and he was like, "Fuck Lang. I know I said I'd come. Go to hell."
No, I enjoyed playing. I tried to do something different this year because I didn't want to be harassed about the Black Army again. So I actually...
Who would do that?
Oh, man, I don't know. So I did War Machine this year, and it was good. I liked the format of, like, the double games back-to-back. And
the mirror games.
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of weird when somebody was explaining to me. They basically said, well, you play a mirror game, and you play the same guy, and you play so many games in the day, but it would almost, like, it sounded like it would have made more sense and been more fun to just have a full-on round robin. And just have everybody play everybody before the day was done.
Well, there's a 14 players, I think, total.
And you played eight games?
And we played eight games. So we could have
almost played everybody. But yeah, okay, I guess the mirror format, obviously you're not moving between tables as much. And you don't all have to collect up and get the call for who you're fighting in the next round.
Yeah, that sort of thing really helped out. I did like the format too, because with War Machine, they're like the casters, you can really go like crazy, and if you've never played against that one guy before, it could really like fuck your game over. Like, you're just like, I've never seen, what does this guy do? Oh shit, he does that, I am dead.
I was ridiculously disappointed that nobody had a Scrotal Colossus. When I heard War Machine was going to be there, because I didn't play, my wife has been ridiculously sick for the last week, and it was just like, you know what, I know Nathan's playing in the tournament, but it's going to be way, way, way too hard for me to try to balance that, and my kids, and my wife, and having people in town, and I'm planning on going to Provost for John's thing, so it's like, I'm just going to go ahead and write this one off and make sure my wife is keenly aware of the fact that I'm writing it off to take care of the family so that when I leave and do a bunch of shit in the next 3 months, she can't like come back and be like, why are you gaming so much? Why are you leaving on the weekends all the time?
It's choosing your battles.
Exactly.
And you're like, I can take the hit on this
one. Well, and 1,800 points for fantasy didn't sound like the most fun tournament. It seemed like a lot of people were finishing their games in about an hour and then waiting around for 2 hours for the next game.
Oh.
Yeah, if you looked over at the fantasy side, after about an hour, there's just people sitting there playing Angry Birds on their phones, walking around, going to get a coffee, because there really wasn't much to do because the games were over so quickly at 1,800 points.
Gotcha. Well, I mean,
although their tournament package was a lot nicer this time around.
For me, it was good because like the two games back-to-back, you could take a little bit more time with your game. But yeah, I didn't see anybody in the War Machine group that like was.
Oh really no, you guys! The War Machine group seemed like they were having a hell of a time.
Yeah, it was really solid. So I met some new gamers there too, and I really enjoyed myself. It was a good group.
You need to project your voice.
Will talk louder now.
Thank you.
There we go. There it is.
I love it. See, I keep looking, and I've actually got it facing him so that he can now see how quiet he's talking.
I am the quietest speaker on this podcast.
That's very, very
ever.
True. Well, and again, like, there's nothing wrong with that, speaking quietly, but yes. Anyways, let's move on to Warriors of Chaos. This is a long time coming for a Warhammer book for fantasy. We have not seen anything since Empire, which when you go back and you think back to it, was a fucking long time ago. I think it was almost 6 months ago. Yeah, and, you know, the stupid thing about this is it is very clear that Games Workshop was holding on to this till the new year. They had all the models prepped, they had the book written, they had everything ready to go, but they had already hit their targets for 2012, and they were like, well, why should we fucking release anything in 2012? We've already hit our targets, you know, we've already hit our profit margins. So, you know, that's why we were seeing all of these staggered releases for Demons and these staggered releases for Warriors and stuff like that. I think in a month and a half, we're going to see Demons right away. The dual release for Demons.
Yeah, no, I think that they already had everything planned out for like 40K, and they knew like last year was a big 40K year. So if they did have to push this into the new year, it wasn't like going to hurt them at all.
How did you like the, since you don't listen to this podcast, how did you like the Dark Angels codex?
You know what? I haven't even bought it yet.
Are you fucking shitting me? Jesus Christ. You're the laziest tournament organizer I've ever met. Runs a good tournament? I don't even understand how that works.
I have a few months before I need to divide,
before you need, so. you need to clean up. Go back and listen to our podcast. Anyway, so as we do, we are going to start out with the best model. It's going to be our model of the week for this release. And Ward and I both agree, and I know that Nathan agrees on this, because we had actually talked about this model not too long ago when it was released in that staggered Chaos release that I had mentioned earlier, and that is Valkia the Bloody. We'll talk about her rules as we get a little bit closer to that part of the book and the special characters part of the Chaos book, but really, this is a gorgeous model. Oh my god, he's got an iPad and he's showing me the 360.
Look at that.
Oh,
look,
I'm just going to lay my head in your lap and slowly lick your chode. But really, it's a gorgeous model. And I'm not going to get into this again because, you know, I said a lot about it before. But, I mean, Ward, what are your impressions of this model?
I really like the model. The feature that really stands out for me is her shield. I think the demon head on the shield is, like, amazing.
See, I'll show you something that I pointed out to Nathan. You don't see it in this angle. The horns are very, very cool. It creates a very, very awesome silhouette. But once you actually turn to the side, you see the elongated length of her head and how demonic and sleek and aerodynamic she looks. Like, just that amount of thought that went into that part of the model, where they're just like, you know what? Let's just elongate the back of her cranium and just make her look aerodynamic, even though she's got these big horns on.
It's like a bloodletter.
Well, exactly. Yeah, like, yeah. It's a very, very well put together, well proportioned model. Because there's a lot of very badly proportioned shit in this book. We won't get into that this episode. We'll get into it next episode. But, you know, like, again, talk about that model a little bit more. Like, what stands out for you? Other than the
branding is really cool. Mm-hmm. How she's got the mark of Khorne on her wings there. The wings are a throwback to, like, old Harpy wings they remind me of. And I don't know. No,
you know, it's
not
funny.
Gargoyle
wings. Gargoyle wings,
that's it.
Well, I think what's interesting about it is you actually just said it right there. I like that she has the mark, because how many models where they're just like, comes with Mark of Tzeentch, and there's no fucking, like, he's got a belt buckle on, you know, but, like, she literally has the Mark of Khorne.
And it's,
I think that's a very interesting, you know, like, I would have never thought about it that way until you said it.
She's got the mark. There you go.
All right. Thanks.
But I mean, like, the new Tzeentch and, like, Slaanesh, they have the character marks as well, but I mean, like, yeah, it's like a huge, like, belt buckle, or hey, look at my shield, can you tell who I'm a part of? Yeah, I can.
My armor is painted blue.
Oh, look at that. But hers is a little bit more subdued too, which is good. It's not a fucking huge.
Yes, very, very much so. I mean, they haven't gone overboard on any particular part of that model, and like I said, one of my favorite things about it is the fact that it's proportioned well. Mm-hmm. It's not a female that's proportioned poorly. I mean, you could say, oh, the waist is too skinny or one thing or another. But, I mean, that's all part of fantasy and those types of things. You don't expect somebody who's a half-demon to be a little chubby and trying to lose that spare tire. Those love handles get in the way of battle.
Too many sandwiches.
Exactly. I mean, come on now. Bitches be squeezing in corsets.
No, I really like it. So.
I really like it as well. Okay, so let's talk about the book a little bit. You know, I don't really think that we have to note about the hardcover at this point, because I you know, I now have a very nice looking bookshelf on my computer table where my computer desk with all of my books there, because now that they're all hardcover, it's very easy to put them on the desk and store them and grab them when you need to get them. And they're really durable. They're really strong. I haven't had any issues with pages coming out, any issues with the bindings falling apart, anything like that. So, I mean, I'm quite happy with the construction of the book so far. And again, that's $10 we're all willing to pay.
Yeah.
So let that be the end of it. I'm not going to comment about the hardcover anymore or the full color. I think we're all pretty happy with it. Nothing has changed in the fluff. Nothing. Don't expect any differences there. It's everything that you know for Chaos, for Fantasy. They talk about demons. They talk about the gods. They talk about Archaon.
End of time.
Shit be the same. It's really nothing there. The Times of Woe, the timeline, all the same. I mean, if you're psychotic, you've probably gone through with the old book and the new book, and you're sitting there going, well, actually, it says 38.7 year, and in the old book, it said 38.6 year. So if you recalculate that time, that was when Lieutenant Commander Data went back in time and talked to, oh, fuck, what was his name? The writer, Tom Sawyer. Anyways, Clemens, that was, episode.
That was interesting.
Been watching The Next Generation on Netflix as I've been painting. I'm not going to lie.
For me, it's been Sequest DSV.
Oh, shit. Are you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Netflix started watching.
Darwin. Sad. Darwin. Lonely.
Well, it's a good thing he has Lucas there to keep him company.
Didn't Lucas kill himself or some shit?
Yeah.
Drug overdose?
No.
See, what I can't handle was the captain, and I forget his name, the actor's name off the top of my head.
Roy Schneider,
yes, thank you. Because his eyes are so off-center. Like, he's got one up where, like, above his eyebrow, and the other one is below his left nostril. And you're just like, I can't listen to you talk. I'm just going to look at the wall while you talk. That show is fucking insane.
I love it.
They had to try so hard to keep it entertaining. Did you go back and try to watch Sliders?
I own seasons 1, 2, and 3 of Sliders.
It's tough to watch.
There are episodes when you're just like, oh, this hurts so much. But
well, I remember like 5 great, like, amazing episodes. And when I went back to rewatch it, I was just like, oh, this is bad. Skip, skip, skip. And I kept saying like, oh, when's this awesome episode showing up? Skip, 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 skip. And it was painful. I couldn't do it. I never went back to do it. But anyways, Army Special Rules for Chaos. Not a lot has changed here, but what they've done is they've cleaned up the ideas that they had in the last book, and they've made them a lot more accessible for list building. You know, you can actually look at a list and say, right, I need to now build for this eventuality. And of course, the eventuality being the Eye of the Gods table, spawns and demon princes. You know, whether it's Robin Crudace, which I'm sure Nathan would point out, whether it's Robin Crudace putting together a book that is basically taking undersold boxes from Games Workshop and making them amazing so that people want to go buy them now. Or it's the fact that he's seeing the gaps in the army where he feels like that flavor needs to come back to the forefront so that we don't have these stagnant Warriors of Chaos armies. Because, I mean, again, you're a tournament organizer, Ward. You know what the Warriors of Chaos army lists look like.
It was.
It's the same fucking list.
Nurgle and six times. Khorne. That's it.
Nurgle and Khorne, but again, like you also see the undivided list with that one horde of Tzeentch chosen with hand weapon and shield that you can never break.
And even like in the like later tournaments right now, like there's not a lot of Warriors of Chaos players at all. Like you'll see like one, maybe two at the event.
Well, it's a one trick pony.
It is,
right? And I think it was funny because when I was at Out of the Basement, we were talking about that because of course Warriors were right around the corner, and somebody had said to me, I think it was either Dan Beyer or Matt Lau had said to me, the biggest problem with Warriors of Chaos is that you've got three good options and three take it or leave it options. And that's basically the entire list. Your entire list is knights, warriors, and sorcerers. Or you can take or leave a lord, you can take or leave marauders, you can take or leave the war shrine. Like that was basically the way that the army book had run. And you had all this other shit that was fucking pointless because trolls were overpriced and they didn't have the special rules for trolls. Ogres were overpriced and they didn't have the special rules for ogres. Shaggoths made no sense. Dragon ogres were ridiculous. Nothing in that fucking list made any sense. It was just like hell cannons.
Yeah.
You know?
You saw a hell cannon in every list.
Every single list had a hell cannon. Some people fought to get two in there if you were playing a big enough size tournament.
Yeah.
And again, rightfully so. But again, the poor Chaos Warriors players, anytime they brought two hell cannons, everyone called them cheesy motherfuckers. And it's just like, I have one shooting unit. Let me take two. You know what I mean? It was fucking retarded. But what's very interesting here is that we have the changes to Eye of the Gods. Demonic attacks, nothing has changed. They're magical. But they do take a point to say that the magical ability for demonic attacks does extend to special ranged or stomp attacks.
Ooh.
Eye of the Gods, same as before, but they do clarify some of the uncertainties about, you know, whether you have to get the last hit or not, things of that nature. It is basically if you kill a monster or if you kill a champion in a challenge. Anybody who has Eye of the Gods, who is quote-unquote a Chaos champion, must always declare a challenge or accept a challenge. If you have multiple people in the unit who have that ability, then you can choose who accepts it, but there's no denying challenges. None. There's nothing. Nobody ever denies challenges. That's just the way that it works. However, what's really cool is the Eye of the Gods table is actually quite straightforward now. It's just a straight 2d6. Every result other than double ones is a great result. It's something that you can be very happy with, and it's something that stays for the entire game. With the exception of Eyes Open, the Eye Opens, which is just a reroll till the end of the turn. But that's like the default that they use for rolling up something that you can't actually apply to a model because like the stats have already increased past 10 or the armor save has already increased to 1+. You can't go past that. It's very well clarified. Marks of Chaos, not a whole lot's changed here. Khorne still gives you Frenzy. Tzeentch still gives you the 6+ ward that adds to other ward saves. Mark of Nurgle is still the -1 to hit in close combat, which is kind of shitty because you would love the +1 toughness, but it's actually a really, really good thing. And I'll talk about that later. I'll talk about why I think Nurgle is going to be winning this book. in the next little bit.
I think Nurgle wins like any book right now that Chaos comes out with.
It's always been the competitor, right? But it's funny because people don't go that way. It's always Tzeentch or Khorne, right? You don't see a ton of Nurgle players out there because Nurgle is the smart choice, and it's always going to be the dependable middle-of-the-road choice, but it's not the heavy hitter by any stretch of the imagination. This book kind of changes that a little bit, which is very interesting. The big kind of downfall again, and for some reason, Games Workshop does not like Slaanesh. Well, and I don't know why.
Who does?
Darren. Darren and Nathan, unfortunately. But really, I mean, and Slaanesh went from being immune to psychology to getting automatically passes fear, terror, and panic checks, which is essentially the same thing, yes, but there are a few perks to immune to psychology, so it's kind of nice to have immune to psychology, you know, but the fact that they just get rid of that makes it really weird. What's interesting about the marks is that in the old book, you would apply a mark to a unit. Right? So if you had a unit of Chosen, it would be 30 points for a mark of Khorne or something around that nature. The way that they've done it now is it's an upgrade to the model. So if you want to put the mark of Khorne on a Chaos Warrior, it's 2 points per model.
Gotcha.
So it can either be cheaper in the case of Knights and a lot of other units where you're taking, you know, three or four models like Juggernauts or Ogres or Trolls or, well, Ogres and Trolls can't take marks. But you know what I mean, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Certain units where you're taking smaller numbers, it's actually cheaper. In Hordes, it's more expensive. Now, we'll kind of talk about points balancing a little bit as we get to that entry of the book. But I think it's actually a much smarter choice. Because, again, very similar to what they did in the Empire book, they've actually rebalanced the points. Where you're paying more in certain areas and it feels like you're getting fucked over. Until you kind of get to the end of the book and you're like, God, everything is dirt cheap. Like, Jesus Christ, all of my additional stuff is dirt cheap. And we'll kind of get into that a little bit more. The Eye of the Gods table, there isn't really any standout thing here. With the exception of the +1 strength and the +1 toughness. Because those are the two that are going to really change the way that people are going to start building lists. And again, I'm gonna get to that. Actually, I'm going to fuck that. I'm going to get to that right now. Chaos Lords have not changed. They're pretty much everything that you thought they would be.
Yep.
There's really no surprises there at all. Chaos Sorcerers have not changed. Same points, no surprises. They still have access to magical armor. They still have access to magical weapons. Well, everything has access to magical weapons. But they have access to magical armor because they're wearing Chaos armor. What is interesting about this is that Chaos Sorcerers, and again, I'm going to toot my own horn. I'm going to go back to the article that I wrote almost a year ago, Welcome to Hogwarts, where I talked about how to play magic users in various armies. And one of the things that I talked about and that I have held to and been very successful with over the last year is that combat casters are the best thing you can take in your list. And what I mean by that is that you take a magic user who has access to magical armor. Because just having access to magical weapons means shit. Right, you don't want to give a wizard a fucking magic sword because you don't want him fighting in the first place.
He's going to fucking die right away.
Exactly. There's no point in it's a waste of points. But as soon as you give magic armor to people, it changes the way that you can build certain stuff, right? So Chaos Sorcerers have access to magic armor, which means that the combination of armor and weapons, you know, a 4+ save with your Chaos armor, give the motherfucker an enchanted shield. And then give him, never mind. Don't give him the Enchanted Shield. Give him Fencer's Blades, right? Instead of a magic staff of some sort. Now he's weapon skill 10, and he has an extra attack. He's now better than a Chaos Lord with one less strength, right? So what are you looking at doing? You now have a guy who's playing a dual role. He's your general. He's your caster. And he can fight. And because he has weapon skill 10... most shit's hitting him on either 4s or 5s, right? Now, when you start looking at the magic, this is where it's really going to start making sense. But we'll get to that when we get to magic.
Okay.
You were giving me that look like, I don't follow you, Lang.
I was scared that you're going to put your finger on my lips and just be like, shh.
I was going to put my lips on your lips.
This scotch is tasty.
I'm drinking a lot more than you are.
It's a
damn good thing I brought the bottle.
You are a lot bigger than I am.
That's also very true.
So,
although I think you fared the best out of all three of us on the on that retarded episode.
Oh yes,
I think it was because you were the lucky bastard who got the amaretto.
I enjoyed that one.
Fuck you. Chaos Sorcerers, Eye of the Gods, all of that stuff put together, it's going to turn these guys into combat monsters. Essentially, okay, I'm not going to say that. I'm going to come back to that.
No, I think Chaos has always had that advantage where, like, yeah, you could, like, load them up, and they have that dual role.
But it's never been an advantage. It's always been a perk. And I think now it's an advantage. And I think that's really what I want to get at. Okay, I'm going to jump ahead here just so that okay. I'm coherent. Chaos have gone from being the one-trick pony to an army that is going to get harder and harder to beat the longer you fight them. You're going to be forcing opponents to be very aggressive against Warriors of Chaos because of the fact that if you're building a combat caster type list, and as I had said to Nathan last week, you know, could you imagine with the lore of Nurgle having two level 3 casters, Mark of Nurgle, -1 to hit in close combat,
yeah,
with Fencer's Blades, with Chaos Armor, with all this other shit, and then after 3 turns, they're both toughness 6 with 5 wounds. Fuck me. Like, it's going to be next to impossible to kill these guys. And it's a huge points denial, and you're getting just as much combat out of it, right? I mean, you're not stuck in a situation like you are with vampires, where your general is the linchpin of your army, and you have to build so much around that character to the point where you never commit that character because you can't lose that character.
Yeah.
Whereas in this one, it's like, no. The dirtier you get, the more combat you find yourself in, the better you're going to get. The more spells you cast, the tougher you're going to get. The more combat you find yourself in, you know, the more desperate your opponent's going to become. Which is weird, because this army book as a whole is so... It really does... And again, I'm going to sound so stupid here. It really does grasp how fickle the gods are, because everything is give and take. They're going to give you something amazing, and then the next, very next breath, it's going to be like, yeah, but then this is just fucking random. You know what I mean? And I think that that's what's going to stand out for this army.
I think what you're saying, too, with the sorcerers and just the abilities that they can get, like the lore attributes,
mm-hmm.
That's what you were alluding to with, like,
for Nurgle in this case. Yeah, yeah. I think for the combat casters, that's the way to go. If you're going to go really, really magic heavy, it's going to be level 4 Tzeentch. Because, I mean, shit, at that point, they're not on par with Slan, but they're the next best thing. Third next best thing, because Dark Elves and the Dagger.
The Dagger, oh, yeah. But, I mean, like, all your sorcerers will get it, though, right? Because if you roll 6s with, like, Tzeentch, you'll get, like, the power dice back, which is pretty amazing, and you can just keep on, like, adding to your spells and such. So,
all right, well, we're gonna jump ahead here because we are talking about sorcerers. So let's talk about the Lords of Magic now that we're talking about sorcerers. We've already alluded to all this stuff, so let's not fuck around with it. Let's talk about the lore of Tzeentch. Lore of Tzeentch, for anyone who doesn't have the book, the lore attribute is Boon of Magic. And basically what it does is that anytime Lore of Tzeentch is successfully cast, make a note of how many power dice results were a 6. After resolving the spell's effect, you may immediately add a single power dice to your army's power pool for each result of a 6 that was rolled to cast on that spell. Only the wizard who casts the spell can benefit from these dice. What's interesting about this is it doesn't specifically say that these dice cannot take you above the maximum power dice that you would have in your pool. So if you had 6 dice... actually, it doesn't even matter, but, and again, I see why they didn't put it in there now, because, you know, normally Lang not math, but Lang math now. Anybody who knew Lang, where I was going with this is like, what a fucking moron.
Lang
but I'm not going to explain it, because I don't want to sound like that much of an idiot. Anyways, it's the typical lore of Tzeentch that you would expect. It's a lot of direct damage, D6 strength, D6 hits, and so on and so forth. What's interesting about this is every single one of these abilities that do damage has the Warp Flame special rule. And the Warp Flame special rule is very interesting. The entire unit has to take a toughness test, whoever takes damage from Warp Flame, if you take a casualty. If the test is failed, the unit immediately suffers D3 wounds with no armor saves. So it just burns down more guys. If the test is passed, the unit that took the damage now has a 6+ regeneration until the end of the next turn. And I absolutely love how at the very, very bottom of that page for that special rule, it just says, Chaos is fickle! With a capital letter! With an exclamation point! Chaos is fickle!
Watch out! Hey, Herc!
Hey, Herc! It's a Hydra! Wow, that was great.
I liked it.
You have the same spells that you had before, Bolt of Change. Glean Magic is actually very cool now. Glean Magic actually steals spells from your opponent. It doesn't just copy it. So if you cast it on a wizard, he loses a magic level. And then whatever random spell he forgets, you learn. That's awesome.
That's pretty badass.
That is really, really, really detrimental. What's interesting about this is actually you're just rolling a d6. And then you're adding your magic level to it. So it's, you know, against another wizard who's a level 4, it's 50-50 who's going to win. It's a total roll of the dice. The wizard takes a strength 3 hit with Warp Flame. So, I mean, at least he's taking some damage on that. But again, you might come off with nothing. So who gives a shit? But what I kind of love about it is this is going to be really, really good for dealing with armies that feel like they don't need to take a level 4. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If a guy's showing up with a level 2 or a level 1, he's fucking done. You're going to be hard-pressed to win that dice roll. I think that that's where this spell is really, really going to shine, is just absolutely turning off level 2 wizards, level 1 wizards. You know, cast it once, never worry about it again. I think that that's really what's so great about this spell in particular. Not even the fact that you're stealing spells from your opponent, but just the fact that you're able to get that stuff from, you know, deal with those things in terms of getting them off the table. You do have the Infernal Gateway, which is direct damage. It's okay. Zeench Firestorm, I believe, is a new one. I don't remember exactly, but Zeench Firestorm is a magical vortex. It can be cast at a higher level, which I believe it casts at 16, which is not that high for the large template. But it requires... hold on a sec here. Anyways. No, Zeench Firestorm is direct damage.
Just direct damage.
What's Magical Vortex? Oh, that's Plague Wind in Nurgle. Yeah, it's just another direct damage, but it is a template. It's good. You know, it's not your Infernal Gateway good, but it's actually a very good spell to get off just for the fact that it's got a relatively low casting value.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those spells that your opponent's never going to be able to let you ignore. Or, I'm sorry, your opponent can't ignore it when you cast this spell. So I think if you open with that spell with Lore of Zeench and you're rolling big dice, there's a good chance you're going to get some sixes. Power dice back if you get it. And there's a good chance that your opponent is going to feel like he's forced to then blow his wad on dispelling that particular spell.
Yeah.
At which point, you know, it's blue fire and pink fire and all that shit, you know, just to, again, whittle them down, do your work over and over and over again, you know, hopefully getting those dice back on everything that you cast. Now, you know, you're a Zeench player. What do you feel about this lore?
I like Firestorm. I think that it's going to be, like, really good. I like the two different, like, levels. You can really boost... it against hordes, and like, I mean, if it scatters that little bit extra, so be it. If you're playing against a horde, you're gonna still kill a bunch of stuff. It's nice. Now with the lore attribute where you're gonna get some magic dice back, I think it keeps the ball rolling in the magic phase, is what Zeech wants anyway. So I'm really happy with this lore now.
It's much better than it was before.
Oh, way
it's
much
a
better.
Step up.
I think it's also, like we were talking a little bit before, kind of like a throwback to all the different like fires, like blue fire, red fire, yeah. So on and so forth. And I like how it's more direct damage again and such. So I'm happy with it.
You're happy with it.
I'm happy with it.
So
because chaos is fickle.
Cass is fickle. Fickle.
As far as I'm concerned, the big winner is Lore of Nurgle. Because I think Lore of Nurgle is the one that's going to play into this list that much more than anything else. Now, again, the Mark of Tzeentch, one of the things that it does add, and I forgot to mention this, is that... hold on, is that just on the Demon Prince? Anyways, fuck it. We'll get to it later.
Okay. We'll do that.
Anyways!
I think Games Workshop loves Nurgle.
Well, listen, like I said, Nurgle is not the hard-hitting lore. But what they've actually done here is they've actually given it the opportunity to be hard-hitting. But it's something that you have to chain. And it's something that you have to be very conscious of and lucky enough to get the spells to roll, which is why I think two level threes is the way to go to make sure that you get the spells that you need to make it work. What you do is you've got all these different things. Now, the lore attribute for Nurgle is Bloated with Disease, which means that every time you successfully cast a spell, roll a d6 on a 6, your caster gains plus 1 wound and plus 1 toughness until the end of the game. So if you're casting 3 spells a turn on average, you will more than likely have a caster who's, you know, toughness 6 by the end of the game with 5 wounds, which is monster level defendability. And not to mention the fact that they've got the Mark of Nurgle, minus 1 to hit in close combat, give them the Fencer's Blades, they're virtually invulnerable.
You're going to be hard pressed to do any damage to them for sure. And I mean, like, it doesn't say like it caps out at any point either.
10.
So, well, 10. Yeah, but I mean, like,
if you get to 10,
oh man,
you ain't caring about that. Game... You're not sitting there bitching about 11. You are happy with
game
10.
Game is over already, so
I'm a stinky steam tank. Well, I think I found the title of this episode.
There we go.
The Stinky Steam Tank. Stinky the Steam Tank.
Oh, man.
I need to drink some scotch now. That is wonderful. And we are totally putting our cups on the table with the microphone. And fuck it. Because this is a cramped couch and I'm slowly leaning closer to Ward as I keep trying to move the mic closer to his face and he slowly is moving away from me.
Yeah, I'm on the edge now and your arm is kind of wrapped around the
side
of the
couch. Well, I'm just trying. I gotta...
That's okay. No,
I'm the only one who understands how to speak into a microphone.
It's true. Yelling is the key.
All right, so the big thing that you're going to want to chain together is Curse of the Leper. Curse of the Leper allows you to cast on either a friendly or an enemy unit. If you cast it on a friendly, it's an augment that gives them D3 toughness. If you cast it on an enemy, it's a hex that is minus D3 toughness to a minimum of 1. Now, what's awesome about this is that if you're able to cast that on an enemy unit, the very next thing that you do is you cast Rancid Visitations. Now, Rancid Visitations is a magic missile, range of 18, inflicts D6 strength 5 hits to the unit. Boom, they're hit. Then they have to pass a toughness test. If they fail, another D6 strength 5.
Yeah.
Then again, until they pass the test. So if you're able to reduce that unit to 1, you could just be sitting there, boom, 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 D6 strength 5, D6 what? Strength 5.
Just wiping out a unit like in a turn, essentially.
Yeah. And then what you have here is Fleshy Abundance, which is also very good. People can read their own books. It's basically a regeneration bonus that you can cast on a bubble, which is very, very cool. Stream of Corruption as their signature spell, I love, because it is a template, flame template, direct damage. And that is a great, great, great ability, considering the fact that it casts on a 7+. Miasma of Pestilence, you can boost up to a 10, which is minus D3 weapon skill and initiative to whoever's in base contact with you. So, I mean, like, there's some very good utility spells in there. There's a possibility of a good damaging spell, which is something that Nurgle has been lacking for a very, very long time. That brings us to Plague Wind. Plague Wind is not too different, if I recall correctly. I'm trying to think back two army books. There was a point where Plague Wind was a template strength 1, no armor saves, and then I think it changed to something else. Now, essentially, it is a magical vortex that you can upgrade at 25 casting value to a large template, where every single person who's hit has to take a toughness test, no armor saves whatsoever. And it works the same as any other magical vortex, so, I mean, there's no real surprises there. But I really, really do think that Lore of Nurgle is the one that's going to be huge. I mean, we all love Flesh to Stone in Lore of Life.
Yep.
Because Flesh to Stone is fucking amazing. Giving a unit plus two toughness is nuts. Look at the utility of that spell for a casting value of 10. I can cast it on myself. I can cast it on you. That's crazy.
It. I like how it's like both the hex and like the, well, there's, the boon, right?
So this is one of those things that Games Workshop realized was a great idea, was giving spells the ability to cast on both friendly and enemy units. And Slaanesh also has something like that as well, which is very, very interesting. And there's nothing like that in Tzeentch, because, of course, it's all direct damage. But it's clear that they're looking at these things going, why don't we do this with these spells? Like, why don't we give these options here? Then we move on to Slaanesh. The lore attribute is very cool, but unlike the other two, it's not a real dependable bonus. Basically, the way that it works is that anytime you successfully inflict a casualty, you roll a d6, and on a 4+, your caster gets +1 weapon skill, initiative, and attacks until the start of the next magic phase. Now,
it's kind of a letdown compared to everything else.
Well, no, not necessarily. It's just more random. Because here's the thing. Take a look at spell number 5.
Did everybody...
Phantasmagoria is a hex with a range of 24. Until the start of the caster's next magic phase, the target unit must roll an additional d6 whenever it takes a leadership test. Disregarding the lowest roll, you can choose to cast it to all enemy units within 24 inches for a casting value of 20, which is not out of the ballpark. I mean, 20 is not insane. You're about 50-50 on 20 with a level 4 if you're throwing 6 dice.
Yep.
Right? And again, I'm not trying to math hammer that out. That's just off the top of my head. What's interesting then is that you can cast Slicing Shards. Slicing Shards is a magic missile with a range of 24 that inflicts D6 strength 4 hits with armor piercing on the unit. The target must then immediately pass a leadership test or suffer an immediate additional D6 strength 4 hits with armor piercing. The target must continue to pass leadership tests until it succeeds. So
it's a combination, just like
it's similar Nurgle's. To the Nurgle one.
Yeah.
What's interesting about this is because of the fact that anytime you're looking at a casualty on a 4+, your caster gets the bonus until the next magic phase. It's very, very interesting. What I like about this is that then what you can do is you can look at the number 6 spell, the Coco Choir. Oh, I'm sorry. Cacophonic. Nick.
I like the Coco Choir.
I like it's the Chocolate Choir.
The Chocolate Choir.
It's a hex. That's the thing people should take note of, is that number 6 spell is a hex with a range of 12. The target unit takes D6 hits that wound on a 4+ with no armor save allowed.
It's only cast on a 12+.
Yep, cast on a 12+, which isn't crazy. If at least one unsaved wound is caused, the target unit has always strike last and random movement, special rule, until the next magic phase. The wizard can choose to cast this on a bubble of 12 inches, and it goes up to 24. What's nice about this is now what you have is two opportunities to do a very large number of casualties, which of course 50% of that is now bonus to your weapon skill initiative and attacks. If you're in combat, you can cast a hex. You can't do direct damage or magic missile,
mm-hmm.
right, when you're in combat. But the hex you can do. And if you do that shit on the bubble and it goes off, there's a good possibility you're looking at a weapon skill 10 initiative 10 attack caster.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm saying it's a good possibility when we're talking about hordes.
It's true. I just feel that Slaanesh got the short end of the stick when it came to the lore attribute.
The short end of the dick.
That's I think that's what they like, but it's for me. It's what it is. The other two abilities just stack for like longer, and then they're better. Whereas like the Slaanesh one, it's just like yeah.
Well, it's a clear chain. It's like Lore of Life with Throne of Vines. Throne of Vines.
It took you a little while. Yeah.
I almost said Throne of Thorns, which is Crown of Thorns, which is Awakening the Wood, which is a Viagra joke.
Crow's Feast.
Crow's Feast. Oh, God. But yes, very much so. It's more clear-cut in Nurgle, and it's a 1-2 punch, as opposed to you looking at Slaanesh going like, oh my god, if things go my way, I'm dominating.
Well, I hope Darren enjoys his spells.
Well, I don't see why anyone wouldn't. Alright, so let's go back. Let's go back. We're finished with magic there. Obviously, there's nothing for Khorne. So let's jump back to the Chaos Lords. We get into the mounts. The mounts are a very interesting choice because of the fact that you do have the Chaos Dragon, which is cheaper and nicer. You do have the Manticores, which are 50 points cheaper than a standard Manticore, and 50 points cheaper than they were in the old book. They're the exact same stat line with other cool upgrades that you can add to them. You have the Palanquin of Nurgle, which is a great choice. And again, you know, if we're talking about doing combat casters, you take two casters, you put them both on Palanquin of Nurgle because it gives them an extra wound and a shitload of extra attacks. Like, why would you not put two level 3 casters on Palanquin of Nurgle and then just fucking toss them into units of Chaos Warriors?
I think that's a solid combination.
Oh my god, are you fucking kidding me? Shut up, Ward. You don't even know what you're talking about. That's a great combination. The Disc of Tzeentch is good. Juggernauts of Khorne, awesome. I think that you're kind of spoiled for choices when it comes to mounts for Chaos. There's and I think lot. That's very, very interesting. Because of that, it does lead into something I'm going to get to as we get to the end of the book as well. Demon Princes is the next thing I want to talk about here. Demon Princes are like 75 points cheaper with a fucking better stat line in almost every single aspect. Yes, they don't come with wings automatically, but the only reason why that is the case is because they don't want all of those Demon Princes that are popping out due to Eye of the Gods to have wings.
You can always glue some on. I mean, like...
Or three
sets of wings. So...
As Ward would do.
I enjoy
Hey, Ward! Wings. Did that Demon Prince fly?
No, he did not.
He did not fly.
He scared a lot of people, though, because they thought...
That was +1 attack for Chaos Mutation, as Ward would say.
They thought he could fly, and they panicked pretty heavily, but he could not fly.
So I'll give you the breakdown here, Ward. You have a shitload of options. You have some very, very cool mark options for your Demon Prince. I think that a Demon Prince is actually a really sound choice now because of the fact that you can make him a caster, because of the fact that you're talking about a monster who still has a 5+ ward save. You actually have the opportunity to give a Demon Prince Chaos Armor now.
Yep.
You know? And if you're talking about a Demon Prince with Chaos Armor, with a Mark of Nurgle, who's a level 4 Nurgle caster, who on a 6 with a successful cast spells getting +1 wound and +1 toughness? Are you shitting me?
I'm trying not to.
It is dire when you're playing Chaos Warriors now that you finish that shit quickly. That you get into challenges as quickly as possible. That you build lists around like Sword of Anti-Heroes and shit that's going to allow you to kill those types of monsters. Because otherwise, the longer the game goes, the more unkillable these things become. Because they're challenging you every turn. They're killing all of your unit champions, and that's a roll on the table.
Yep.
And when we get to the War Shrine, it's even worse. So it's going to be a very, very interesting list. Or I'm sorry, it's going to be a very interesting army that we're going to see in tournaments. And again, a lot of this is going to be the next week of kind of absorbing what people are putting online and kind of seeing what people are talking about when it comes to list building, but it's crazy.
I think the two armies that might have some trouble too are like Tomb Kings and Vampire Counts.
Oh yeah.
Because as soon as you summon your champion back and that challenge goes out again, bang.
You're feeding the fires.
Yeah.
You're making them stronger so much faster. That's awful.
You just go in and chew up those units. You're like, whatever.
Challenge. Yeah. Challenge.
How hard is it to kill a skeleton champion?
Fuck off. Chaos Warriors are a point cheaper.
Cool.
And again, the marks have changed so that depending on the size of the unit that you're trying to put out there on the table, you are either paying more or less points. Chosen are, again, a little bit cheaper. and they have the same options as before. But the very, very cool thing about Chosen is that after deployment, before the game starts, you actually get to roll on the Eye of the Gods table for the entire unit. And you get to roll 3 dice and pick the result that you want. It's not throw away the lowest, throw away the highest. It's pick the result. So any combination, you know, obviously you're going to get combinations out of those 3 dice. And you're going to say, right, these are the options I have. I want this one. +1 strength for the entire unit.
You could have a Demon Prince right away coming on the board.
Exactly. You could have a Demon Prince on the board, turn 1, ready to go. And it's just you're losing your champion. And what's really awesome about that is, you remember how much a Chosen champion cost in the old book?
I think it was
27 points. Because it was 15 points plus a 12-point upgrade.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's
and it was like, fuck off. Not that much now. It's actually, they've reduced the cost of those champions, so it's only a 10-point upgrade.
Okay.
So you don't feel like, I mean, again, it's only 2 points, but they've given you the benefit of the doubt there, right? I mean, but any list builder is a points
for. So still getting a Demon Prince for 25 points is pretty solid.
Yeah, no,
it's
shit.
It's a good trade-off.
Well, I think Demon Prince is still a 200-point model, you know. It is very, very cool. Now, when we talk about Eye of the Gods, Eye of the Gods is any Chaos champion and any Chaos character. That includes special characters. So there's a chance that Archaon is going to turn into a Spawn or a Demon Prince.
I hope so.
I mean, there's some very, very interesting things. What I do love about the idea of these guys turning into Demon Princes is one of the things that they talk about in the rules for that result is that he retains all of his weapons and special abilities that he had before he turned into a Demon Prince. So essentially what you're getting is if you're on a mount, you lose the mount, right? The mount dies, it goes away, whatever, right? Unless it's a chariot or some shit.
Gotcha.
Right? Unless you have to roll on the... You might have to roll on the monster reaction table, actually. That might be an interesting question for people to answer. But really, what ends up happening is that, you know, this character is still going to get all of those special stuff that you bought. You're not actually losing anything by having him turn into a Demon Prince.
I think an Archaon Demon Prince would be pretty kick-ass.
You fucking shit me? That'd be an awesome conversion.
Wow.
Go balls out! Doo-doo. Put 6 wings on it!
Wow, fuck. It's Archaon. 8. Come on.
All right, fair enough.
Don't cut corners here.
All right, so we're running long. I'm going to push us through here. Marauders got more expensive, inexplicably.
You didn't see very many Marauders to start off with anyway.
Well, they got like 2 points a piece more expensive.
Really?
And then that's not even including the fact that you're always going to have a big unit of Marauders, and they're still paying like 2 points per model for a mark.
And it's still the old models?
Yeah. Ugh. The bad Arnolds. The Catachan Arnolds. Chaos Knights got more expensive. You do not get ensorcelled weapons as a default. They're the exact same points as 40 points per model, but they're strength 4. For 3 points, you can buy ensorcelled weapons. For 2 points, though, Ward, for 2 points...
2 points?
You can get a lance.
I'm going to write this down.
A lance. For real, a lance. Like, who the fuck is stupid enough to say, well, I want to be strength 6 on the charge instead of strength 5 all the fucking time.
And then do nothing after.
And then do nothing afterwards. It's, you know, I appreciate the fact that they're giving people the option of buying cheaper knights. But they're not cheaper. They're the same price as before.
They're going to die quicker.
Why are they not giving you any incentive whatsoever to take lances? 1 point on 5 fucking knights? Lick my balls.
No.
Okay. Skull Crushers of Khorne. Really nothing of note here. There's not a whole lot that's changed according to what I've seen. They do have option to take the ensorcelled weapons on the riders, which is really cool.
Yep.
But they did actually clarify that Juggernauts of Khorne are toughness 4. If you looked at the FAQ or the White Dwarf release that they had for the unit entries for Juggernauts, okay, so in the rulebook, they FAQ'd the fact that if you're on a mount, whatever the toughness of that mount is becomes plus the toughness one. Of the blah, 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 okay, and so on and so forth. And what ended up happening is that Skull Crushers were toughness 5, and characters on Juggernauts were toughness 4. because of the fact that the Juggernaut had a different stat from the Skull Crushers. That has been cleared up. Skull Crushers are toughness 4, toughness 4 across the board. And it's kind of interesting because, I mean, when we get to the points, it's basically what Nathan and I had said before. Why would you take Knights over Skull Crushers? There's really no point. You're getting way more attacks at a higher strength. You're getting the fact that they're monstrous infantry, so they're getting a stomp. You're getting the fact that, you know, they've got all of these extra abilities, and you're still fighting just as fucking hard as you would be if you were Chaos Knights. Like, it really doesn't make any sense to go with Chaos Knights, especially in, like, a unit of 5, when you could take 3 or 4 Juggernauts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think the only reason that people would really want to take them now is, like, if they want to do more of a theme, right? Like, no more Khorne, let's go with...
Right, yeah, exactly. Fair enough. Chaos Chariots are basically the same as they were before, which is pretty
rad.
However,
brand new model.
Oh my god.
It's about fucking time.
You know what? We talked about this on the last show. You don't listen to the show, so I'll reiterate it
for
you.
Well, I listen slowly.
You do, actually. You're always like 6 episodes behind. I get like these notes from you every once in a while, these texts where you're just like, "Oh my god, that thing you said." I was like, "When did I say that?" And I go and I look back, I'm like, "That was 4 weeks ago.
2 months ago. What is going on?"
You have the option to take the Gorbeast Chariot, which has Killing Blow on its impact hits, which is pretty rad. And it is a armor save 3+, 5-wound, toughness 6 chariot for 130 points.
That's pretty solid.
That's fucking crazy.
He looks really sad, though. Like, the model.
He's a sad ape.
He is a sad ape.
Amy, hate, chariot. You got the Congo reference? Up top.
So good.
Up top.
Oh my goodness.
Scotch cheers. Oh, there it is.
I like that one. I am super...
The worst part was that I was beating my chest as I was saying that.
I'm super happy that they finally came out with a chariot again. It's been way too long.
Well, and again, the model is pretty good. It's a nice model.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a lot of people have kind of bitched about it where they're like, oh, and the Arnold on that one is fucking awful. And, oh, and I hate his cape. And then they're bitching about the fact that it's not busy enough. Like, literally, like, they're just like, well, there's just this big flat area on the front of the chariot. Like, there could have been scuffs and skulls on
those. They could have added more fucking skulls.
Jesus Christ. Anyways, and then randomly, out of the blue, with no rationale whatsoever, Camaro, because that's the way they spelt it. It's not a Camaro. It's not a Chimera. It's Camaro. It's French, motherfucker.
Chimera.
It's Camaro. I say Camaro. Camaro.
Ray. It's Ray.
I know people call it a Chimera, and I'm like, meh, it's a Chimera.
What?
Chimera.
What was
Chimera?
What movie really like defined that word? Was it the first like Mission Impossible where they're like, oh, what is the, I don't know.
God, I do not remember the first Mission Impossible. I remember a helicopter exploding and his face going against the front of a train and like flattening into a pancake.
There was some, it was like, hey, this is like the magic like serum and, I don't know.
I like Tom Cruise. You're my Tom Cruise.
Thank you. I will take that.
Done. But the issue with the Chimera is that it is very good. You get a shit ton of attacks. You get 4+ scaly skin. And it's 230 points. 6 attacks with an additional D3 attacks. So, I mean, this thing is pouring out a shit ton of attacks at strength 6, toughness 5. It's actually a weird choice because it's really good. But it's amazing when you buy Regenerating Flesh for 15 points.
That's awesome.
You get a 4+ regen with a 4+ scaly skin. It's a fucking Hydra if you give it the breath weapon. And it has wings.
It does, and they...
No handlers.
The wings actually make the model fly, which is awesome. So.
Which is weird.
I know. I've never seen wings that do that before.
No, really, I think the Chimera is kind of the weird standout for this. And this is where I wanted to talk about the fact that this army book has actually gone in a really, really weird direction. Because, like I said before, it used to be the one-trick pony. Now it's urgency. But along with that urgency, this book has become the sole army book that has, as far as I know, the most monster options out of any other army book in Warhammer right now. There's literally four monstrous characters that you have options to take out of special characters and actual characters. You can take Galrach as a monster.
Yeah.
You can take a Lord on a Manticore or a Chaos Dragon. You can take Scala!
That's what I picked. The angry beast thing.
The shitty one.
Oh, we'll talk about him.
And you can take the there's one more.
Skylia?
The Dragon Ogre character. I'm going back. The Shaggoth character.
Oh yeah, Kolak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can take him as well. That's just Lord choices. Then you get into the fact that the Chimera is a special choice. And then you have more monsters in your rare choice. Like, it literally, it's fucking insane. The only place you don't have monsters is your core. Like, it's bonkers. You can take so many fucking monsters in this list, it's insane.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm talking.
Well, to myself. No. I think. Well, are we gonna talk?
About, I'm also drunk.
Are we gonna talk about your other like big monsters?
We'll get there.
Okay.
So, all right, the Chimera. You guys can read. You know what's up. Forsaken. Let's talk about Forsaken. When Storm of Chaos came out, they were skirmish and they were shit. When the last Chaos book came out, they were a unit again, but they were shit. Now. They're actually kind of okay, but they're still not worth taking.
I think they've also got the stigma of being shit for so long.
Is stinking for 3 years.
That nobody's...
Actually, fuck that. Stinking for 6 years.
Nobody's going to be jumping on the bandwagon for them, I don't think.
Okay, what I like about them is they're actually a pretty decent option. The problem is that they're still more expensive than Chosen, right? That's the issue. Their random mutation table, if you roll anything but a one, is awesome. If you give them the Mark of Khorne or the Mark of Slaanesh, which gives them Swift Stride, Mark of Khorne gives them Hatred, they're great in a horde. Because in a horde, could you imagine rolling out 30d3 plus 1? Yeah, because if you do... No. 30d3 with Hatred, and then you roll up something like Poison Attacks. Or Always Strikes First.
Always Strikes First would be fantastic.
Well, with Initiative 4, most of the time you're going to be re-rolling anyways. But Poison with Hatred.
Yeah.
That's a combo to fuck people up. 30d3 attacks is massive. Could you imagine a horde of these motherfuckers? It's really, really good. But the problem with them is, like everything with Chaos, is that you're giving us something that now all of a sudden is kind of decent. But they're still random. What am I planning for? How can I hedge my bets? The problem is there's no way to hedge your bets with Forsaken.
You'll see them in one-off games, I think, but like tournaments, nobody's gonna risk it.
No, fuck that. No, not when for a point less you can take when you can take fucking Chosen with the Mark of Khorne.
And you know what Chosen do at that point.
Well, and again, yeah. You can give Chosen halberds, you can give them great weapons, you can give them two-hand weapons. And again, you're banking on the fact that Chosen are always going to get the Eye of the Gods table.
Yeah.
So there's a pretty decent chance you're already going to get plus one strength or plus one toughness off of them. And that's for the entire battle. You, from the start of the game, you can look at your Chosen and say, right, this is the role they're going to perform because I rolled this for Eye of the Gods. You know what I mean? Forsaken, you're just fucking banking on the fact that you've got a horde of 40 and you're going balls out with them. But Jesus Christ, that's fucking expensive. The only saving grace is that they're core now.
I don't even think that's a saving grace. Well, I don't think you'll see them. I still don't think you'll see them at all.
I think the modeling kit is decent. And I think that, again, I think that you are going to see people taking them over Chaos Warriors. And here's why I say that. Take a breath. Here's why I say that. The reason why I say that is because Forsaken actually will hit harder in general than Chaos Warriors with hand weapon and shield. And that's kind of the big thing. What they've done is they made them a point more expensive, but they've given them Chaos Armor instead of Heavy Armor, which is huge.
Yeah.
They have the opportunity to have regeneration, which is very good. always strikes first, hatred, all these different types of things. You can give them swift stride and their movement six. How many hordes do you see that are movement six that are going to pour out that many attacks at strength four, possibly strength five? It's a decent idea. If you are taking Lore of Nurgle and you give them D3 toughness, shit. I mean, the unit has a lot of possibilities.
Yeah.
And the bigger it gets, the more obscene it gets in terms of the possibilities that you're able to put for it. So I think that you will actually see large units of Forsaken out there as opposed to Chaos Warriors, almost only because of the fact that even your opponent isn't going to be able to know how to deal with them. Because he's not going to want to go toe-to-toe with a unit of 40 Forsaken that have been buffed with an augment that maybe have a character in there that's giving them a bonus. Like if you take fucking Festus and then the entire unit gets a 5+ ward save them, or regeneration save no matter what.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there are ways to hedge your bet, but you have to devote everything to that fucking unit. And I think that that's where you're going to start seeing these different types of lists. You're going to see the Festivus with Forsaken list. And you're going to see the Chaos Warriors with Chosen list. And you're going to see the Slaanesh Marauders list. And so on and so forth.
Gotcha. Okay.
But it's problematic because of the fact that in terms of points economy, they're fucked up. You have to devote everything to them to get anywhere with them. And even then, it's fucking random. And you pray to God that you don't roll a one.
Yeah.
So, I think the daring people will go that way. But I think that you're right. You are generally right. The net lists are not going to do that.
No. We'll see. We'll see what appears in the next tournaments.
Well, so, I mean, it's been out for a day.
That's true, right? So, I mean,
I'm sorry, it's been out for 12 hours.
What is it? What's the next one? You won't see them at next tournament of champions because the book will be too new. Sorry, we got to yell louder.
You just have to lean toward the mic. That's all you have to do. I will look at you and my mouth will face the mic. It's not complicated.
It's not rocket science. It's hard though. The scotch is so tasty and it's beside me.
Holy shit, I'm already drunk.
Well, yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens with the Forsaken. But tournament scenes, I don't think so. Yeah, down in your basement here. Yeah, you'll see somebody around a big squad of Forsaken for sure. Squad unit. What am I talking about? I don't know.
Horde army. Horde again. You know, and again, it's not like we don't see that in fantasy right now, where people are running lists around one huge unit as an anvil in the center of their army, and then basically supporting it as often as possible with monsters and chariots and wizards and things of that nature, right? It's this idea that, you know, your opponent's never going to get the points for that unit because he can't kill 50 Tzeentch chosen with hand, weapon, and shield,
gotcha.
Right? It's that massive 900-point points denial.
And with so many monsters now in this book, too, it's a lot more feasible.
It is. And yeah, absolutely. Chaos Spawn, 5 points cheaper. You do have some very cool options. The fact that you can give them Mark of Tzeentch, which gives them a breath weapon. Very cool, but it's 70 points per spawn. You know what? Like, again, I think that if you have a couple points left over and you're sitting there going like, well, I don't know if it's really worth taking a half-sized unit of Chaos Warriors, by all means, take 3 spawn with Mark of Tzeentch, because your opponent's going to freak the fuck out. And you know that the turn that they charge, especially if they get like a flank or some shit, they're going to be really good. I mean, a strength 3 breath weapon that's flaming on top of their D6+1 attacks, fucking go. Why not? They're not as good as they are in Chaos Space Marines. They're not. They're just not. And so I'm not going to advocate spawns like crazy when it comes to the Warriors of Chaos book, because they really fall behind in a lot of places. They're good. They're fun. I think that they're great if you just have 50 points and you don't know what to do with it. By all means, take a spawn. But really what it comes down to is, because of Eye of the Gods, anybody who plays Warriors of Chaos has to buy at least 1 Demon Prince and at least 3 spawns. I think there's no way around it.
Just in case.
You have to be able to deal with the fact that in both of these cases, if you don't have a Demon Prince model or you don't have a spawn model, the model that rolled double ones or double sixes is just dead. They're off the table. It says specifically, remove them from the table. They are now casualties.
Yeah.
If you didn't replace it with a spawn, or if you didn't replace it with a demon prince, you're fucked.
Yep.
So you have to buy that shit and paint it up. Luckily, the demon prince and the spawn kits are both fucking amazing, awesome kits.
So many options.
You would be fucking crazy to not have picked up those kits at this point.
Not enough wings, but I can overlook that.
All right. I'm going to push on here because we are super long at this point. Warhounds, the same, but 2 points a piece per model gives you Vanguard. Ogres, cheaper. Weapon options, cheaper. And they actually get the Ogre Charge, which is the same as the Ogre Charge that you get in the Ogre Kingdoms book. Chaos Trolls, 10 points cheaper. And you do get the Troll Vomit option that Trolls have had since the beginning of time, until Chaos Trolls apparently didn't have it. Now they have it again, which is great, which means a Throg army with nothing but Trolls is actually kind of feasible.
They learned how to throw up again.
Hey, why not? Dragon Ogres, slightly better, but nothing really more than a couple of points here and there in terms of weapon upgrades. Shaggoth, the same, but slightly better. Hell Cannons, the same, but, you know, the option to do an amazing amount. Slightly more unstable when it comes to their misfire table.
Yep.
Otherwise, you still want to take Hell Cannons. I mean, shit. Stone Thrower 5/10, why wouldn't you? And the fact that it's still a monster, the fact that it's still a monster and can still fight, great. Why wouldn't you take them? War Shrine, this is the one I really wanted to get to. This is a must for every single Chaos Warrior list. A must. And it's a shame that it's such a fucking terrible model.
I don't mind the top. I don't like the guys carrying it. If you did something else, put wheels, yeah.
Buy some chariot wheels, glue them to the side, and put that shit on the floor. Because the fucking retardo ogres on the bottom. And actually, once you read the rules, you kind of get the idea that they're not actually ogres. They're more like spawns. Take those spawns that you fucking bought and just put those on the bottom of the fucking thing. Really, anything that you do to convert this other than retardo ogres is a great thing.
I think so.
You know, I have to laugh because one of the things that I wanted to talk about, and again, I ponder a lot of blog entries for the show, and I've kind of been backing things up in terms of like holding on to these ideas that I have. But really, it's like one of them was, it was just going to be a blog entry talking about how awesome it is to convert things and how terrible it is to convert things, because you'll convert something that Games Workshop has not created a model for.
Mm-hmm.
And then Games Workshop will create a model for it. And you're just like, I was off. I was so far off. Like anybody who took a chariot and just put some shit on the back of it is going to feel like an ass.
That was my first, like, when the I've War Shrines first came out, I was like, yeah, no, that's what I think it is. They're just carting this around. It's awesome. Good times.
We didn't even have a picture.
No, nothing. Nothing to give us an inkling of what they were going for.
But the War Shrine is about 125 points, which is fucking crazy. It's the same as the Ape Chariot.
Amy.
Hey, Chariot. It's about the same as the Ape Chariot. And really, the depressed Ape Chariot. But what's awesome about it is it's a chariot as well. It does not have impact hits. But what it does is anyone within 12 inches of it gets to roll an additional dice on their Eye of the Gods. And then pick who they want to discard. So it's the same as Chosen, which is really, really good. And what you do get as well is a bound spell that allows every single person with... I'm sorry. It allows D3 friendly models with Eye of the Gods to roll for free on the Eye of the Gods table. And because you're within 12 inches of the chariot, you get to roll 3 dice and choose the option that you want. This is a must. There's no way that any Chaos player will not have one of these. I don't think that you need 2, but you must have one. This is what feeds into what I'm talking about, where it's an issue of urgency. You have to defeat Chaos as quickly as possible, because the longer the fight goes, the worse it gets for you.
I think with the 3 dice and the option of choosing, you don't like automatically get the top 2. I think it's I think it's amazing. I think that there's more chances to get Demon Princes, less chances to get Spawns, and that really can boost your army huge.
Well, and again, you're talking about huge. It's got a 4+ save with toughness 5 and 5 wounds.
Yeah.
5 fucking wounds. And you can put a character on it. You don't even have to use the default. You can put a fucking Lord on this shit.
Can you give it marks again?
No, but you can give the Lord on it marks.
Okay.
Right? Like, you can do some very, very awesome things with this War Shrine. I do not think you should put a Lord or a character on the War Shrine. I think you should keep it as baseline cheap as possible because of the fact that you want your opponent to be focused elsewhere. You don't want him to be looking at it going like, well, that's clearly what I need to kill. Especially if you're playing like Blood or Glory, right? Like, fuck that. Don't do it. Somebody was talking to me earlier where they're just like, you should put your BSB on this. I'm like, are you a fucking moron? Do not put all your eggs into one basket. Do not do that. Put this thing at the back of the table. Keep it behind everything. Keep it within 12 inches of the stuff that you want to have all the bonuses, chosen, big units, and characters. Go fucking balls out. That's what you want to do. This is going to buff the shit out of your combat casters. On top of the fact that they're getting bonuses from their lores. On top of the fact that you're gearing them out for combat. And you're putting them on a fucking Nurgle Palanquin. That's 4 things so far in this podcast that I've gone over where it's just like that combat caster is a fucking god. He is going to make every other lord level character in most armies look like pieces of shit. Because of these things.
There's a lot of things that stack, which is amazing.
But every turn you let it happen, the worse it gets for you.
Yeah.
And that's the big thing that I think people need to take away from the Chaos book. Giants. Same old shit. Carnifex. Ward heard that for the first time today.
Oh my goodness.
The Carnifex.
I saw the post about the orgy of it, and I was just like, what are they talking about? Interesting, but...
Oh yeah.
And then I also saw the model today for the first time, and I was just like, oh.
$100 for that shit?
Yeah.
Listen, between the fucking Slaughter Brute, which is... I love the fact that they made it one word. It's a Slaughter Brute. You mean it's not a Slaughter Brute? No, it's a Slaughter Brute.
Slaughter Brute. You gotta say it quick, too. I like the look of the Slaughter Brute. The Carnifex...
Carnifex.
Yeah, like you said, it's just a matter of time before somebody paints all that goo white and...
And it's come.
Danger.
Jizz beast. All right, so let's talk about the Carnifex rules. It is a weird monster to take. And I'm going to flip to the back of the book here because I want to take a look at the points cost real quick. It is a rare choice.
240.
Yeah, 240, which is a lot. For this monster, considering the fact that you have a shitload of other monsters that are much, much more dependable. You do have a very, very cool bound spell that goes with it. Wait, no, it's not. I don't even think it's a bound spell. Hold on, I'm going to take a quick look. Yes, it's a bound spell level 5, Aura of Mutation, which means you do have to waste a dice on it, right? But, you know, actually, you're going to have to waste at least 2. Because throwing one dice hoping for a 5 is not really that great. You got to roll 2 dice hoping for a 5.
Yeah.
Right? So that you can get that power of mutation. It's an 18-inch range, which is problematic. And you have to roll a d6 and hope for something that's decent. And actually, some of this shit that comes through on the units that you're trying to fight, the target must take d6 toughness tests and has a stupidity rule for the rest of the game. Like, sure? Meh? Like, really... It's not that amazing. Sure, if you're rolling a 5 or a 6, it can be pretty fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a monster. The problem with this is, at toughness 5 with 5 wounds, 4+ scaly skin, 5+ regeneration, random attacks, it's just too... In a list that's already so fucking random, so give and take, so here's something awesome, but here's what sucks about the things that you do, this is the type of thing that you're going to want to kind of avoid. Because of the fact that you can't bank on anything that this thing is doing actually doing something good for you. It's got some interesting stuff, but it's a lot of points. Especially when you have the option to take the sad gorilla chariot, which is guaranteed awesome.
And,
right?
And sad at the same time.
And super sad.
Again, with the random.
And less rapey.
Less rapey. I think... Again, with tournaments, you won't see these. with that random element, it's just not a guarantee. You need something that you can know 100% what you're going to do with it, and...
I'm finishing off the bottle.
Do it. I would think less of you if you didn't.
I got to stay on brand.
Slaughter Brute!
So yeah, the Slaughter Brute is actually pretty awesome. Particularly due to the fact that because of its really, really high strength and the fact that you're able to give it a very, very awesome bonus with the extra claws. I mean, it's not awesome, but it's kind of the no-brains upgrade.
You're like, hey, extra attacks. Yeah, I could use those.
What makes this amazing is that it is the monster killer, right? The fact that it has strength 7, the fact that whoever you bind it to with the runes of binding, mm-hmm. you have to pick another character. And then that character's weapon skill... Where is it? Weapon skill and leadership replace the Slaughter Brute's weapon skill and leadership. So your Chaos Lord with weapon skill 8 or 9, right? Especially if you take like a special character, you take like fucking Archaon, and Archaon, you attach this to him, right? This thing becomes the monster killer. It becomes the most amazing beast you've ever seen on the battlefield. And it's... Yes, it's expensive. It's again, it's over 200 points. You're going to sit there and you're going to go back and forth between it, taking two fucking sad Amy chariots, and taking fucking all this other shit to go with it. But it is very, very good for taking out other monsters. I think that that's very important when you start talking about the fact that you have all of these different monster options.
Is it the base stats or the boost? Can they be boosted stats?
Oh, you can boost those stats.
Yeah. So that could be... that could
fucking
be...
cast some Lore of Nurgle on him, give him extra toughness?
That... Well, no, like, just because, like, with the Runes of Binding, is it the character's, like, base stats?
Uses the model's current weapon skill and leadership.
There you go. So you can do a combination with Slaanesh, then.
Oh, yeah, you definitely could. You absolutely could do that. Yeah. And that means also that you could have a pink Slaughter Brutes. All right, let's get into the special characters here. Jesus Christ, this episode is running long. All right.
It's a good thing I'm so pretty.
I think what's awesome about this is, what is it? It's like 1:30 in the morning? No, it's like 1 in the morning. All right, good time. So let me check my battery. I don't want this to like shit out on us in the next little bit here. Where's my mouse?
Hey, drunk? Talk into the mic.
Fuck you. All right, so special characters. Archaon, 100 points cheaper. They tweaked his rules, not bad. Wolfric, basically the same as he was before, tweaked his rules, not bad. Valkia the Bloody, awesome. Awesome as she was before, which is pretty awesome. And again, I wanted to talk about this when we talked about the model, but I was going to wait until we got back to this. You know, something about Valkia the Bloody makes me think that she fucks on her period.
What? Why?
I'm just throwing it out there. I love a bitch with reverse jointed goat legs.
Oh my goodness.
Also... joke number two for Valkia the Bloody. Could you please read the name of her magic item?
The Spear
of Sloppnir. Anybody who takes Valkia the Bloody and in the second round of combat doesn't say or scream out loud, "Who wants Sloppnir seconds?" Fails! They fail at life. That's what happens.
Wow. That is
amazing. I've been holding that joke for 8 hours.
That's what you were talking about before. You're like, I can't tell you.
I can't talk about this yet.
We have to talk in the podcast.
Village, sure, if you feel like it, why not? I don't feel like he's crazy wrong.
I don't mind the model. I think...
I hate the fucking model.
I think the paint job is really nice, and I don't know. He looks like a little alien thing.
He's the only guy in this list coming out with Lore Master, and I think that that's the only real selling feature for him. The fact that he's a level 4 with Lore Master, and the fact that he does have a couple of little bonuses that are going to allow him to cast spells a little bit better than normal. But really, I don't feel like... In the vein of what I've been talking about this entire podcast... and drilling into people's heads. He's not a combat caster, and I wouldn't really feel like comfortable putting him on the board.
You can make better combinations.
Exactly. I think that for the points cost, you've got better options there. Festus is a hero choice, which is really crazy because he actually has the pretty awesome ability to give the unit that he's with The regeneration five plus special rule. And I mean, like, that's fucking amazing considering that he has the Mark of Nurgle. And if you're going to put him in a unit of warriors with the Mark of Nurgle or chosen with the Mark of Nurgle, I mean, he is actually pretty good for the points that you're paying for him, as fucking stupid as the model is. And the fact, you know what I was saying earlier is that, you know, if you look at Festus the Leech Lord and you think to yourself, man, it's like the Goblin King from The Hobbit just quit his he quit his calisthenics program and just let himself go. That is Festus the Leech Lord. I like to think that the Goblin King with his Cockney accent does calisthenics.
That's how I picture Festus now.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to go into Empire, get the money, put it in the bag. We're going to get out. I'm from London.
Oh, my goodness.
Sigfald the Magnificent.
Super pretty. Sure. Super pretty still.
He's like an interesting version of Sanguinius.
Why? Why did you bring that up?
Well, I mean, really, it's just, he reminds me of Sanguinius. And it's just like, I think his rules are very cool. I think he's interesting. I think he's kind of fun. But really, I don't think that he's points you need to be spending in this list. I think with the wealth of options that you have between monsters and special characters, he ranks somewhere around like the fifth guy you should take.
Gotcha.
And that's the biggest problem with him. Again, unless you're playing a very themed list and you just really, really love that model. Mm-hmm. Throg! Awesome!
I like Throg.
He's more expensive, but his breath weapon is fucking amazing. You remember how before you could use his vomit as a breath weapon and then in close combat it was just D6?
Yep.
Now it is a straight up breath weapon. Where basically it is a strength 5 breath weapon, no armor saves allowed.
That's pretty sweet.
That's fucking crazy.
And now that like everything like can throw up now again.
Oh, and again, hero choice. Nice. He's a hero choice. You make him your general and trolls are core. And trolls being 10 points cheaper, you can kind of do some shit there.
There's more options now, right? Again. Yep.
And what I really like about Throg is the fact that you're able to play Throg in a situation where you want to play a monstery beast list because his abilities apply to monsters. And I think that that's really, really cool. Like, he kind of acts as a BSB for monsters. And I think that that's awesome if you're sitting there going like, fuck this. You know what? I'm going to play the Monster Mash list. Nothing but monsters. It's going to be trolls for my core. It's going to be fucking Dragon Ogres, it's going to be Shaggoths, it's going to be all sorts of shit. You know what I mean? It's going to be monsters, monsters, and more monsters, and he's the only character I have in my list. Why the fuck wouldn't I do that? And you know what? I think that it's viable. I think for the points that you're paying, for the stat line that you're getting, and for the fact that, you know, he's got some very, very good stuff, I think Throg is great, and I fucking love the model. I think the model is amazing. It was one of my favorite models. It's actually the second model in line after Valkia the Bloody in terms of my favorite. I think it's just so, so well done. It's actually the first troll model for Chaos that actually seems like it would be a scary model. You know, like there was the Orc troll models that look really, really good.
Yeah, no, right? I really like him.
Scalia, fucking stupid. Galrotch, like 100 points cheaper with the exact same stat line. Tweaked stats, fucking amazing. Kolek, the Sun Eater. Fuck me. This guy is awesome. Oh my god. He shoots lightning. Every turn. It's not a bound spell. It's not a shooting ability. It's not anything anybody can dispel. It's just every turn he fires lightning at a unit within 24 inches in his front arc. D6 strength, 6 hits. He can shoot it at his own units and give them frenzy from the fucking lightning rage.
I keep on thinking you're saying he's shitting lightning.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
He's like Braveheart.
William Wallace, he shits lightning.
He's like William Wallace if he had a big dragon dick. All right, so there. We've kind of come to the end of the book here. I'm not going to drag it out too much longer. I'll probably wait for Nathan to talk about the Chaos Mutation powers and the items.
Cool.
As we talk about list building and things of that nature, because we are at about like an hour and 30 minutes at this point.
Gotcha.
All right, so Ward, you've kind of read through it, you've kind of seen what's there. What's your overall impression of the book?
I think that...
Are you happy with it? That's the first question.
I'm happy with it. I think that you'll see a lot of players come back to their Warriors of Chaos. a lot of people, I think, have shelved their Warriors of Chaos right now with this edition. With a lot of points drops, you're not going to have necessarily to be pigeonholed into that big, or sorry, small elite army necessarily anymore. There's a lot more options now. Tournament play, again, they'll go with things that they know what they'll end up doing. The random element, I don't think, is going to really play big into the effect there. But I think the one-off games at home, yeah, why not? Let's take something fun, random, try it out, have some beers, just relax. So I'm happy with the book.
Yeah, I'm quite happy with the book. I think, you know, every Warhammer book that we've seen so far has really knocked it out of the park. And I think that they're turning the game in a very good direction. And it's the kind of direction where each army has its own flavor. One of the things that I was complaining about the Dark Angels Codex was that the Dark Angels Codex was fucking... it replaced every other Marine Codex. There was no reason to take any other Marine Codex. You didn't have to play Dark Angels... you didn't have to play Blood Angels. You didn't have to play Space Wolves. You didn't have to play Vanilla Marines. There was no point. There was no point in playing anything else because Dark Angels did everything else better. They had the most amazing unit in the game, bar none the best unit in the game. They had better Terminators. They had better options. They had better everything. And they gave them the default options that Vanilla Marines would have had. Like, you can take Interrogator Chaplains, or you can save 20 points and take a regular Chaplain. Why would they even give you the option to take a regular Chaplain? It feels so comprehensive that it loses its flavor. You don't even look at it as Dark Angels anymore. What you do is you look at it as, how can I adapt this to play with the list I'm currently playing? Because there's no real point in playing anything other than Dark Angels, and fucking Marines are Marines.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the issue. Because again, you would not have known this, having not purchased the book yet.
I don't know it.
But a normal Marine is 16 points, right? With They Shall Know No Fear and all that kind of shit.
Yeah.
A Dark Angels Marine is 14 points. They don't have They Shall Know No Fear. They have Stubborn.
Oh, no.
Right? And that's the thing, right? Like, it's you sit there and you go like, well, why wouldn't I pay 14 points for a Marine that I could give a shit about whether or not he has Stubborn or no, They Shall Know No Fear, when I can take a special character that gives everybody in the army leadership 10? Like, it, you know, like there are so many things in that book that just make you step back and go, there's maybe one or two reasons, like if you're just sold on Stern Guards or fucking Ironclad Dreadnoughts, you know what I mean? Like, that you would say, okay, I'm going to stick to Vanilla Marines. But if you have a bike army, if you have land speeders, if you have fucking a Land Raider heavy army, if you have Terminator heavy army, if you have a Marine heavy army, you are going to play Dark Angels. That is not the case when we look at Warhammer armies and these army books, because each army book is so distinct in the way that it's built, and it's so flavorful, and it's so enjoyable. Read the thing.
All right, I can do that. Now I'm gonna have to buy the Dark Angel Codex.
Mm. You really should, actually.
Really good. I will.
And your Marines from Ventralox can readapt themselves. No,
that's
themselves. Just
that's my Imperial Guard. So
you're, oh, I'm sorry, your Praetorlox. No, you know, and really, that's kind of what I wanted to talk about when it comes to this book. Is it? I'm very happy with it.
It's.
I think it's interesting. I'm not saying that it's game breaking. I'm not saying that anybody's going to walk over every other army book that's come before it. And I haven't seen that in any army book that we've seen in 8th edition so far. I think that they've really been very careful about staying in that balance area and finding a very happy balance between what people want to see, what awesome rules they had before, you know, and kind of what we're going forward with. I mean, we saw Vampire Counts before they got their 8th edition book, and they had that fucking crazy magic phase where they were just blowing people to pieces, and you would just throw the hordes out on the table, and nobody really gave a shit because you had all these awesome units. Well, yeah, they reined that shit in, and they made it good, and they made it actually playable. Was it the best thing ever to see the light of day? Absolutely not. Were ogres the best thing to see the light of day? Absolutely not. Were orcs? No. But they're all right there on the same level. I can't say that one is distinctly better than the other so far, and this book does exactly that. I think that they're doing a very, very good job of balancing 8th edition so far.
Yeah, I don't think that there's like a huge power creep that you're usually anticipating with a new book, right? So, I think it's solid. I think you'll see, like I said, more Warriors of Chaos coming back and making a stand, so...
That has been Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Ward.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.